Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the New Statesman podcast that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, it's a Hamilton special!
We have both finally seen the musical based on the life of Alexander Hamilton, and we'll be discussing our experiences of it.
Hiya!
Hello!
I'm really excited. This is our Hamilton special.
Whoop, whoop. I know. So just a bit of background for new listeners who've joined in the last 18 months or so. When Hamilton first became a big sensation on Broadway in about 2016, I want to say, we had quite a few American listeners write to us and say, I absolutely love Hamilton. When are you going to talk about it? And we kind of had to say, don't know, because whilst we can listen to the cast recording and read about it, it doesn't really seem fair for us to review a play that we haven't actually really seen. But Hamilton finally opened in London at the end of last year, and Anna and I have now both seen it. So approximately 2 years after you all asked us to, these are our thoughts.
Yeah, it feels so funny to even bother having thoughts about Hamilton at this point. But I guess we have them. I think we'll probably discuss the play in quite a lot of detail. So if you're a ticket holder and you're going to see it, maybe, and you don't want to be spoiled and you haven't listened to the soundtrack to death, then, you know, maybe avoid for spoiler purposes. Mm. But it does feel weird to say, like, spoilers for the life of a man who died literally hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Also, you know, you could read the massive Ron Chernow biography if you wanted. Something I haven't actually done, although maybe one day in the distant future when I have lots of free time, I will do that because it is apparently an incredible read.
Yeah, I just don't think I'm going to do that, Caroline. I really don't. I don't know why. Basically, when I first heard the premise of Hamilton, you know, hip hop musical about one of the founding fathers, I was like, this sounds like a terrible, terrible idea. And it's something that I'll never be interested in. But then there's only so many like amazing people you respect can say to you, oh, this is amazing, before you're like, okay, well, I should obviously give it a go. So I did give it a go and absolutely loved it. Reading the biography is just a step too far into just political nerdery for me. And I'm, as many people know, one of the least historically and politically engaged people there is. So not for me.
I like to think I will one day. I probably won't, but I like to, you know, believe that about myself.
It's good to have goals.
It's good to have goals. I saw someone I follow on Twitter saying that she'd just finished listening to the audiobook and it had taken 32 hours.
Wow. That's a lot of hours of time of your life. We both listened to the soundtrack a lot before we saw it because, I mean, we were never sure if we were ever going to be able to see it, really.
Mm, yeah.
So we just dived straight into the soundtrack and, I mean, is the right word like an operetta or something where it's like a musical that is almost entirely done through the singing? There's maybe like six words of non-sung
dialogue. I think so, yeah. I'm trying to remember what the exact, because there are sort of boundaries between opera, like light opera, and then musical. And it is to do with how much is sung versus spoken. So yeah, I think this falls somewhere in between like musical and opera really, because there are a very few little spoken asides between songs, but almost all of it is like sung or rapped.
It's basically whatever Les Mis is, it's that, yeah. Right? So we already knew the story. We were pretty much all spoiled for it. But was there anything that did surprise you in seeing the play in person versus listening to the cast recording?
A few important things that I was very surprised by. First, that I liked Aaron Burr a lot more when I could see him.
That's interesting.
Because I think, I don't know, probably wrongly, in listening to the soundtrack a lot, I sort of decided that you're either a Hamilton fan or a Burr fan, that you cannot see both sides of that argument. This is an incorrect opinion. I think you can, but
I think you can.
What I previously thought.
Yeah.
And based on, whilst I think the vocal performances in the original Broadway cast recording are both amazing, I just like sided with Hamilton some for some reason in my mind and didn't really see, like, I would often skip songs like Dear Theodosia and stuff. I was like, I'm not really interested in your inner life, Burr, go away. But seeing it on stage, and definitely the way that Burr is sort of the linchpin of the whole thing, you know, he's the narrator all the way through, made me come to appreciate that actually you can see both sides of it and it's not a binary situation by any means. And then I think the other really important thing that I hadn't expected was how upset I could get. Even having
how much I could cry.
Exactly, like as you say, like you could get spoiled for this by like reading Wikipedia, you know, it's not hard to find out what happens at the end. And also, you know, I'd listened to all the music, but I definitely noticed in my sort of maybe the last year or so of listening to the soundtrack that I definitely listened to the first half of it more. Because the second half has more reprises rather than original songs. And it starts weaving all of the musical elements, you know, together to form like new songs for new scenarios. And as the sort of plot kind of spirals. And it's just sort of less satisfying to listen to when you're like walking somewhere. It's more complex and interesting from a musical and plot point of view, but it's not quite, basically all the bangers are quite early on.
Yeah, it's definitely front loaded with bangers.
So I think I'd sort of neglected the second half a bit in my listening. And so therefore, when I saw the play, A, I really appreciated how great that music is, but B, I found the way a lot of it is staged really, really moving. So like, for instance, after his son has the duel and dies, that I found devastating. When the reprise of the song that his mother used to teach him piano comes back, that I just sobbed. I found that really upsetting, which never would have thought that just based on listening.
It's funny because I think I've actually had like the opposite experiences to you on both those points. In the, I mean, we should say before we go into the Aaron Burr stuff too much, we saw two different Aaron Burrs, I think.
Yeah.
So I saw Giles Torreira, who is the build Burr, the actor who is supposedly playing Burr for the entire run, but the understudy has, of course, done a few performances that both you saw, I think, and some other people that I work with. And I left the theatre quite disappointed in the version of Burr that I'd seen, because Giles Torreira has a much more kind of bitter performance, I would say. Like, his Burr is deliberately much less charismatic than Hamilton. So he's shorter and he's just a little bit more awkward. A lot of his rapping isn't like totally smoothly on beat, which is, I'm sure, an absolute deliberate decision to kind of give you this guy who's kind of like less smooth and a little bit kind of unsuited to the environment of kind of politics where you have to be super charismatic, which is an interesting interpretation. And it's much more in that kind of like Mozart, what's the other guy called from
Salieri?
Yeah, I never remember that, but it's, yeah, a much more Mozart Salieri dynamic, which I don't like as much as those two charismatic people with like different perspectives on life portrayal, which is what you get in the soundtrack so vividly. And I've just listened to the soundtrack so many times that I've just come to love that Leslie Odom Jr. performance, and to see one that was so different and much less smooth and beautiful, I was like, oh, I don't know if I like this characterization. And also, I've seen it a lot more times. I've seen, oh, I'm overlooked and I'm I'm not charismatic and I'm going to be bitter about it and I'm therefore going to become a villain. I've seen that narrative so many times that I kind of liked that the original cast recording didn't go down that route.
Yeah, whereas, so I saw Sifiso Mazibuko in the role and I thought he was absolutely fantastic. One of the highlights of the whole thing. And it has the complete opposite effect that way round, because he has a vocal performance that is a lot closer to Leslie Odom Jr. He's got a really beautiful, like, smooth R&B voice, as well as being really on it with the rapping. So that was fantastic. But then also, he's physically quite a large guy. Like, he's quite sort of muscular and built. And he actually dwarfs Hamilton in that regard. And especially in the latter stages when they're not wearing military uniform anymore, and his costume, he's wearing a really beautiful, like, bottle green, like, velvety suit with a tailcoat and stuff. And you do really get that sense of his smart and his feeling of injustice that, like, hey, I'm a handsome, clever guy. Why am I not getting all these opportunities? Like, particularly in the song The Room Where It Happens, which is all about him being, like, left outside. You could feel it, like, coming off him, where he's like, why aren't I inside? Like, I'm awesome. I'm amazing. I'm better than this, like, weedy Hamilton guy. And yet he's in there and I'm not. So, yeah, his performance maybe suited my conceptions about the show better.
I'd love to see it, actually. I'd really love to see the other Aaron Burr and just compare and contrast. Because for me, actually, the Aaron Burr performance was the biggest thing that detracted for me from seeing it live. Because I left kind of thinking, like, I actually kind of preferred the Spotify soundtrack, which is definitely not something you're meant to think when you leave that play. But yeah, and it's interesting you talk about the front half being really front-loaded with bangers, because I really felt that in the soundtrack when I was listening to it, and I also felt that when I went to see the performance, in that there's a line, which I'm not even sure if it's in the soundtrack because it's a spoken line, where someone says, can we get back to politics, please, after Hamilton's son has died. And it gets a laugh because actually you're really desperate for some more of those fun political kind of rap battles and stuff to start again, because it is exhausting because it's so emotional. And I felt really, the first few times I listened to the soundtrack, I wasn't that interested in the rap battles. But when I saw them being performed, which are second half songs, for those who don't know, when I saw those being performed, they were so much more dynamic, because you could see there's lots of different parts in those rap battles, and it's much clearer to see those things happening, because you can see exactly who's speaking when any kind of euphemism is acted out a little bit as well. So it really hits home a lot more. So
yeah.
I agree with you in that I much more enjoyed the rap battles in the second half, but the emotional bits, I actually felt quite desperate for them to return to some of the fun bits.
Yeah, I can see that. Actually, it is really heavy stuff a lot of the time. But yeah, I know what you mean about the rap battles. They are higher stakes, particularly the bit that really struck me is, I think it's in, I can't remember if it's in the first or second one, but when Jefferson is saying, you know, why should Virginia pay for New York's debts? We're chilling in the shade, we've got it all made. And Hamilton's like, yeah, that's because you don't pay for labor. He's essentially like, to his face, being like, it's because you're a slaver and that's immoral. I consider that to be immoral. And on the soundtrack, you're like, clever wordplay, allusion to slavery. When you see it live, you're like, oh shit, he just like called him a slaver to his face in front of all his colleagues, and they all go like, in a really, you know, and it just, yeah, it feels higher stakes and it feels more real, I guess.
Yeah. The other thing I think is just that the comedy elements really come through in a more fun way. I've always joked that one of my favorite lines in the whole of the Hamilton soundtrack, and you only get it quite subtly in the soundtrack, which is why I think I thought I was maybe being a bit clever by being like, oh, it's so funny, the delivery of this line, is when he says, I was chosen for the Constitutional Convention. And seeing him perform that with a little smug dance, it's obviously so much more obvious that it's a silly joke and it's funny. And, you know, the King George performances are so funny.
Was fantastic. I don't know what it was like on the night you saw it, but the night I saw it, I think he got like the biggest cheer.
Oh, totally.
Of anyone.
Absolutely.
Because absolutely hilarious.
Michael Gibson plays King George and he does it absolutely amazingly and really milks all his like pauses and his stance. And he's literally dressed up in the most ridiculous adorned outfit, you know, like wobbling. And he looks amazing. So yeah, all of those kind of comedy elements, I think, really come forward when you see it It's like Thomas Jefferson as well, like such a silly performance.
Yeah, he's really funny. I think, so according to a lady I talked to at the interval who's from Chicago and had seen it there and was now basically on a holiday to London so that she could see it again. she was saying that in the Chicago version she'd seen, King George didn't get nearly as much like applause or laughter, and she was theorizing that maybe British people find it even funnier because it's like our king,
and definitely
we're on the bad side and he's evil but hilarious. And I did think there was a sense of that it was like, ah, look, this is our involvement in this, isn't he awful?
And yeah, there were a couple of other things that really surprised me. One thing that I had managed to miss before we move on to what we actually think of the show, one thing I'd managed to miss in my listening to the soundtrack was John Lawrence, my favourite character, dies at the end of Act One, which makes a lot of sense when you realise that he's not back. And of course, the guy who plays John Lawrence then plays Philip, Hamilton's son, in the second half. So it makes total sense that he would die, but for some reason I hadn't put two and two together and hadn't realised, even though he says at the beginning in the first song, they go, "We died for him." It's spelled out so clearly, but somehow I hadn't put two and two together. So I love John Lawrence. I don't know why. I'm sure we'll go on to talk about our favourite characters, but I love him so much. And when I realised that he died, I was like, like a little like shot to the heart. And that's one of the few spoken bits that isn't in the soundtrack when they read out a letter from
him. I did the exact same thing. I didn't realise he died either. But yeah, subsequently realised it made a lot of sense. Not least because it gives that motivation for Hamilton to like get back stuck in, doesn't it? Like he hears that Lawrence has died and then he's like, no, I cannot spend more time with my family. I have to sort the country out. It needs me. I must finish his work. I must carry on doing this because he believed in it. So it's an important like thread of the motivations. Mm.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yes, so let's move on to just appreciating it as a play. What did you think of the design and production, for instance?
Beautiful. Really loved it. It's a tricky space, I think. So I can't even remember what the theatre's called in Victoria.
The Victoria Palace Theatre, I think.
The Victoria Palace Theatre, which is not the roomiest or best view, sort of. Not every seat gets an amazing view in the Victoria Theatre, but the play is staged on lots of different levels. You get, you know, in battle, for example, there'll be people running up on sort of a raised kind of balcony area and things like that. So you're always going to see most of it. It doesn't really matter where you're sat. So I think they've dealt well with the kind of constraints of the theatre there. And it's like, on a practical level, there's like no room for your legs in that theatre. They've really like crammed in as many seats as possible, which is good because it means more people can see Hamilton. But yeah, there's sort of a strange element of the staging in that there's these dancers in sort of flesh coloured tones in kind of like a nod to period clothing, and that they've got maybe some frills here and there, but they're mostly basically just like lycra bodysuits, and they're kind of gyrating around all the time, and at points I found that a little bit distracting from the main cast. It wasn't always there,
Yeah, I know what you mean. I did think that as well. It's like, you can definitely see some, like, bum stuff. Like, yeah. the jodhpurs are quite tight.
Yeah, but sometimes I was like, how is this necessary for the action at hand? But there are some songs that are staged amazingly. I think Satisfied is an amazing, it's a fan favorite, that song anyway. It's Angelica's kind of like main song, and she's a character that loads of people really like, and it's, you know, really emotional and really beautiful, and she gets some really sassy rapping, so it's great all round. But the staging is done where it's sort of time is being turned back, and so the stage rotates and people start moving backwards, and you're kind of flitting between the first meeting of Hamilton, Angelica and Eliza at a ball, and Alexander and Eliza's wedding day. So the two settings are kind of being switched between, and they do that really, really beautifully. It looks amazing. When she says rewind and the stage just starts moving backwards, it's amazing.
That was so brilliant, because you do get that sense when you're listening to the soundtrack. You do know that that's what's happening, but they portray it in such detail. Like, every time, I hadn't realized that every time Eliza and Alexander's voices were going to come in, we were going to like see them redoing the exact same bit, but from Eliza's perspective, because she's kind of set it up in her narration. You know, she's showing you, well, this is what the conversation looked like when you saw it the first time, and now I'm explaining to you actually how it was, which is really, really clever. And I don't think that's something I've ever seen a musical do before, is like basically repeat the same number but from a different person's perspective, and like unpick it as you go.
And I think it's one of the most intimate moments in the whole soundtrack is the exchange between Angelica and Alexander, where she says, you know, like, you know, he says, you'll never be satisfied, and she says, oh, I don't know what you mean, you forget yourself. And it's like very sexually charged and very emotionally charged, and just really, really like a close, intimate moment. It's one of the few kind of really small conversations you get like that that illustrates something much bigger. And that's really hard to do on stage, because in a film, it would be so obviously a close-up moment.
Yeah.
But instead, they kind of use this elegant choreography where lots of people are moving in this very, you know, staged, choreographed way, which is often how things feel, you know, like the classic cliche of like they were dancing in the Pride and Prejudice film and everyone else disappeared. But it is a great way when you can't zoom in and give a really close, intimate look at people's expressions and stuff. It's a really nice way to capture that same feeling, is by using that wider choreography and making it really kind of like revolve around these two people. And I think they did that really well. That was my highlight in staging.
The other moment when that really comes to the fore is at the very end. And so, yeah, heavy spoilers if you're going to see the play and you don't want to know exactly what it looks like. But the moment during the duel between Hamilton and Burr, when they are being rotated around the stage and Hamilton is making this decision about should he actually fire his gun at Burr, or should he, in the lyric, throw away his shot, like shoot it in the air to show that the debt of honour is cancelled and that he doesn't actually mean him any harm. And all the different things that he's considering are like appearing in the circle between them. So like he sees Eliza, you know, he talks about his parents, he thinks about his son, and in this really complicated dance, all these people sort of like appear before him essentially. And then they disappear and it's just the two of them standing there again. And the lighting even in that is really, really clever, because it sort of throws your gaze to different parts of the stage. Yeah, I found that absolutely amazing, and not something I could ever have understood just from listening to it.
Totally. On the flip side, the very final moments of staging, I found a bit much, which was the Eliza, who lives, who dies, who tells your story bit, and she's a bit like, the orphanage, and there's a lot of like lights, I feel like, and she's like reaching out to towards the light as she takes her final breaths, and that, for me, there's something a little bit hammy about that for me always in things. So
yes, I know what you mean. The very final moments of it, I felt, were a little bit too much almost. But I think maybe, and this could be very stereotypical of me, but I think maybe we're being quite British about this. I think maybe it's meant to be this great big, like, Hamilton, as we've learned from the musical, was a man who like lived with his heart in his sleeve
theatrically.
He lived theatrically, like he really wanted everyone to see. So yeah, maybe that's why it's like that. But yeah, I agree. I did find that like very like last bit where you see like Eliza standing at the front, like reaching out towards the light. I was like, no, don't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, not for me. But yeah, it's such an amazing, ridiculous play. And it is so over the top. Like, it's almost silly to make a criticism of the end of Hamilton being a bit over the top, because it's like the most ridiculously over the top idea of all time. And yet somehow it just works and it's brilliant. And it just has so much personality, and you know, no one else could have written this other than Lin-Manuel Miranda, and that is just so obvious when you watch it, because there are all these references that collide in a way that they just should never be together on a stage, and yet they are. So it also just feels really exciting to be there in the theater. Every single person there has clearly wanted to see it for so long. I saw girls like fully just like sobbing on their mothers with just like absolute like, I can't believe I'm here looks on their faces. I can't believe I just saw it. And that's amazing to see. So,
yeah, that is amazing. And it was also really heartening to like look around the theatre and see so many young people there. Because normally, and not that I go to the theatre in the West End a huge amount, but like I'm pretty accustomed when I do to being the youngest person there. And like, I'm nearly 30. So that doesn't feel right. Whereas that was absolutely not the case with Hamilton. Like, there were loads of like, as you say, like mums with daughters or sons, lots of like, I saw loads of like multi-generational groups with like grandparents and parents and kids, which I think is such a testament to a brilliant piece of art, really, all those people feel related to it. So yeah, that was really, really nice. And also good that although tickets are like hugely in demand and difficult to get hold of, my memory is they're not extortionately expensive.
It's going to cost you like 50 quid a person to go, basically.
Yeah.
Which
is no more or less than like any other play in the West End.
It's expensive in terms of a night out, isn't it? Most people don't have 50 quid to spend on most of their evenings out at the weekend, but it's a really special thing to do. And you know, although, as you say, tickets are in demand, you can't buy tickets. You're just not going to be able to go for the next like 9 months. But
yeah,
tickets are available for you to buy. And actually, returns and stuff and like on the day, cheap tickets are a real thing with this production. I think in a way that it's not in the US. So you can just call up first thing in the morning or like go to the theatres first thing in the morning. And one of my friends managed to get tickets only a couple of weeks away from getting some returns online, so it's always good to keep checking and stuff if you do want to go.
There's also, I think, a daily lottery that you can enter to like win tickets as well. So yeah, they are trying their best, even though it is so in demand, to make it available to as many people as possible. Yeah, I mean, it is. This woman I was talking to from Chicago, she was saying that it's completely sold out in Chicago forever, and they don't seem, from what she was saying, to have such a good like returns system or anything. And she was saying that, you know, to buy tickets like essentially on the black market costs more than a trip to London to see it and buying a ticket legally. So we decided we would come to London and see it legally.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
That's what she felt she had to
do. Amazing. But yeah, go and see it if you can. Listen to the soundtrack if you can't. It's great. Also, George Washington's amazing. Shout out to...
Oh, yeah. Sorry, we should say that. He was fantastic.
Shout out to Obioma Uguala, who is George Washington. And my God, he was great. He was probably the acting highlight for me. But also, I did love the Alexander Hamilton, who is... Jamal Westman was amazing as Alexander Hamilton. The titular role, to quote Lady Bird.
Yes.
Yeah. And we should really stop, because we've been talking about Hamilton for a long time, and I think this is the point where if we don't stop, we just start quoting lines at each other, and that's just so awkward on so many levels that I don't think we should do that.
You can all imagine that for yourselves. You don't need us to actually do that. Find a friend to do that with by yourself. So yeah, we love Hamilton. Thank you very much to everyone who early days recommended that we get into it, and yeah, hope that you can all see it as soon as possible.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave us a rating and a review if you fancy. It makes us happy and it also helps other people find the show.
If you'd like to come and see us in person, check out the events page of our website, seriouslypod.com/events. Details of our next pop culture quiz and anything else we're doing will appear there.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're Seriously Pod on all of them. Follow us to keep up with what we're up to or to chat to other listeners about things you've enjoyed on the show.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show or hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.